Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Raiders Insider Podcast on NBCSportsCalifornia.com. Introducing your host, Oakland Raiders Insider, Scott Baer.
Welcome, Raider Nation, to Episode 5 of the Raiders Insider Podcast, and by now you know how this new format goes. We are going to have an exclusive one-on-one interview with former Raiders receiver, legend, three-time Super Bowl champion, Cliff Branch, coming up in a bit. But before we get there, I've brought in my pal, Fallon Smith,
woo-woo,
to talk a little contemporary Raiders football, which isn't in the greatest state at this point. They are 2-2 on a two-game losing streak. They got embarrassed on national television in Washington, and then they lost a close one that wasn't that close against Denver. And while we'll talk a little bit about that game, a little bit about the Baltimore game, we can't bury the lead here, Fallon.
Yeah, can't bury the lead.
No, and that is that starting quarterback Derek Carr has a transverse process fracture in his back. Should be out anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks. I've heard it's going to be on the lighter end of that recovery timetable, but still, anytime that you're without your starting quarterback, not a good thing. EJ Manuel steps in at this point, a guy with, I believe, 16 starts to his name, plenty of experience in this league. Give us a take on where you think the Raiders are at heading into a winnable game now with a backup quarterback.
Well, here's the thing. Even with EJ Manuel now in here, there were still issues, right? There were still issues offensively. They looked so dominant the first 2 weeks. And you and I spoke here on this podcast about how, man, this Raiders offense does not have any weaknesses. And then, boy, we were wrong, right? They were exposed at Washington. Then Denver, you have the best run defense in the NFL. They couldn't run the football, but they haven't been able to run the football the last 2 weeks. That has definitely not helped the passing game at all, has not helped Derek Carr. You've had issues with the offensive line. So there were so many concerns already with Derek Carr under center. Were they going to win that football game if Derek Carr was still in the game? Probably not.
Maybe not, yeah.
Probably not. Because as you saw, when EJ came in, he gave the team a spark. What was he? Was he 8 for 8? To start.
That's right.
And obviously, they didn't have any film on EJ. But at the same time, shoot, EJ hasn't taken any reps with the first team guys. So that's a positive, right? And at the same time, the Denver defense gave us different looks, and they were playing zone, so it was a little bit easier to move the football. Anyways, however, with all that said, yeah, losing Derek Carr is a big deal because this is your franchise quarterback. This is a guy you paid $125 million to lead this football team. And obviously he needs to, put his money where his mouth is and, produce for this football team. And this is who you need to win. And then aside from that, this is also your leader, right? Your leader, your voice inside that locker room, your leader, that voice on the sideline. So not having him is very tough. I know that he's here. So at least he'll be, still a presence inside those meeting rooms and help EJ out, which is great. And you remember what happened last year when he wasn't able to be in the meeting rooms. He wasn't able to travel. And you had a backup quarterback in Connor Cook and Matt McGloin. They are not EJ Manuel. EJ Manuel actually has some experience. So when you look at the situation, it's not as bad as it could be, right?
Right.
Right now it actually looks a little bit better because that Derek Carr is coming back. And last year, he wasn't coming back, right? Mm-hmm. And it's and everything just crumbled after that. And you know it's just short term. But 2 games and 6 games, that's a big difference.
Yeah, it is. Ultimately, they're crossing their fingers they can get him back by the time they play Kansas City, which is there's 2 other games in front of that. But realistically, that Kansas City game is on a Thursday night. So that does compact his timetable a little bit because yeah. things are going to have to start getting revved up. Kind of staying on EJ for 1 second. I think just in talking to Lee Smith, who played with him in Buffalo, mm-hmm. and seeing him come out there against Denver, I think he inspired a little bit of confidence. You don't see a lot of the same looks that we saw last year when you're talking to guys, and of course they're going to say the right thing, yeah. but they may not sound like they believe it. Yeah. I think this time they really do, because EJ has the experience, has shown them a little bit more during the course of his tenure as a Raider, which started this spring. Yeah. And more importantly, you can see the guy has first-round arm talent.
Yes.
This isn't an undrafted guy they picked up or a guy who's never played an NFL snap. He has that combination of talent and experience. So that leads you to ask, well, why didn't it work out in Buffalo? I think he was in a bad situation yes. in Buffalo where he had 2 head coaches competing with 3 different quarterbacks and never really got a chance to get into a flow after starting.
Didn't have the weapons that Derek Carr has.
After starting as a, yeah. as a rookie, and you're yeah. right, didn't have those weapons. So this is kind of a, EJ didn't want to say this was a second chance for him, mm-hmm. but this is kind of a second lease on life to put some starting tape together,
yep.
maybe get his career back going towards the starting role that he might want it to be, or at least a higher paid backup. Mm-hmm. I think it's an important game for this quarterback. It's also turned into, and I want to hear your thoughts on this too, it's the sequence between Baltimore and Los Angeles Chargers. Mm-hmm. Was a long time ago, was that's 2 wins.
Yep.
Now it seems to be a real tipping point of this yep. season, right?
Yep. Oh, and what I want to just add to what you had said earlier, you know, we both have been with this team since 2013, right? Uh-huh. And so we have a good feel for the pulse of the locker room. And as you mentioned, and I want to tell Raider fans this for a reason, though. When Carr went down last year, they had to say the things that they had to say about Matt McGloin and Connor Cook, right?
Mm-hmm.
The confidence they had in them. But you could feel it on their, and you could see it really on their faces. That was all just smoke and mirrors. You know, like they just had to tell us that.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it's because it's not long term. This may be a different situation. But we were here when they were walking off the practice field or just from walkthrough. Everybody's in a good mood. When we talked to, you know, Cordero Patterson, as you mentioned, Lee Smith, they're like, y'all, look it. The roof ain't falling in right now in Oakland. You need to chill out. We are so, pumped and confident that EJ can lead this team to wins. I even asked CP, I said, well, why are you confident? And do you believe that he can, you know, help you guys roll off some wins? He goes, yeah, man. And he goes, the S word,
mm-hmm.
whatever happens in football, you know, and people get injured. He goes, but this is a dude who was a first round draft pick, you know, as you mentioned. But he's going to be fine. He looked good to us in camp. He already has a rapport with us, is what CP said. Obviously, he wasn't with the first team guys, but they're super confident. So I just wanted to tell Raiders fans, you know, like this is a different feel right now, right? Like they're not just, you know, putting on a front and, you know, saving face and letting us know, oh, yeah, we're confident, yeah, because we have to. But no, they really are confident with him. Obviously, this can change if they lose on Sunday. But these are games that you should be able to win with an experienced backup quarterback like EJ Manuel, right?
Yeah.
Now, the big thing is the only way that you're going to win these football games with an experienced backup quarterback with like EJ is if you run the freaking football. Or you establish a run. That is the biggest key for these next 2 games, right? Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right, especially when you look at how little they've run. It's been less than 35 yards the last 2 games. If they do it again, it'll be the first time in forever that this franchise has rushed that little.
Yeah.
And when you ask players and coaches about, well, what's wrong with the run game, they're naturally not going to give away whatever mm-hmm. weaknesses they have. But I think Washington put some things on tape that weren't positive. For it may have kind of shown, all right, here's how we can take away some of the Raiders' favorite blocks. And a question that is valid, that maybe people in Oakland don't want to hear. And I'm not going to say, is Marshawn washed up? I don't think he is. Mm-mm. But do you need to use him maybe in different ways or maybe involve the younger guys more? What do you think about that? Just in terms of maybe not his carry count, but it seems like when he comes in, the world knows that he's going to run. And DeAndre Washington and Jalen Richard only played six snaps each the last game, even if they're playing from behind. So I just think it's kind of an interesting time for this running game. It hasn't found an identity yet, you know, and they are kind of floundering and they need some direction.
Well, here are the two issues that I have. So the reason why they haven't been able to establish a run is two things. One, obviously the offensive line is getting beat in the trenches, point blank, you know, which is crazy because this is the highest paid offensive line in the National Football League. So they need to do their job. The other thing is the run game is too predictable. You know,
I think that's maybe
the biggest issue. I mean, that is the biggest. I mean, you know, if 2-4 is going to come in, you know, he's going to get the football. And they loaded, what, 8 in the box? And they still gave it to Marshawn. And he ran into a brick freaking wall, you know. You need to get those other guys involved. And even if you do put, you know, 2-4 out there, don't give him the ball. You know what I mean? You got to keep the defense on its toes. Maybe start a Jalen Richard or DeAndre Washington, you know?
At least mess up the rotation somewhat. Exactly. Because it does seem very, you're talking about predictable within a play, but you also know when you're going to get Marshawn, you know when you're going to get DeAndre, then you know when you're going to get Jalen and then Marshawn again. Yep. It seems formulaic early on. And I think people, after watching the Raiders really just roll right over the first two teams, are left searching for answers about what happened to that offense as compared to the ones that we're seeing now. And I think over the course of the first four games, you see coaches, they start to collect a lot of game tape. They start to see what works, what doesn't, where your weaknesses are, and then they start kind of figuring it out from there. So I think a running game could really be EJ Manuel's best friend.
Yes.
Another really good buddy of his could be Amari Cooper, who's been stuck in a little bit of a rut. And I talked to Cliff Branch about this, and he was saying that that when Amari Cooper was drafted, when he was available, that he was begging and pleading Mark Davis, please take this guy. This guy has greatness in him. And then they took him. And he said that what he's seeing a lot this year is he's seeing the same routes over and over and over again that Amari needs to work more within the entire route tree and go deep and use his speed and things like that. But in order to take advantage of his route running, he needs to be catching the ball more.
And he needs to also get open.
So what do you think is the key to getting him out of this thing? Is it play design?
Yes.
Is it a couple quick catches?
Yes.
What's the secret
here? One, it doesn't help when Michael Crabtree's out. That's number one, because everybody just has to key on him, right? You saw Seth get a lot of touches. You saw them trying to use Cordero Patterson as the receiver. But if Michael Crabtree's back this week, you know, then they have to look out for both of those guys, right? But those drops were still happening when Michael Crabtree was there. And it's what we spoke about yesterday on Facebook Live. The fact that I think, in my opinion, you need to change give him little short dump off passes, bunch formations, whatever it is, to just get him open. And then also if you're giving him, you know, those, you know, just 5 yards, he could turn them into 15. The yards after the catch. I mean, that's what he is very good at.
Yes.
His yak yards is what we call them. It's like a basketball player who is in a shooting slump and you give him a couple layups or he makes a few free throws and then he starts finding his stroke mid-range and beyond the arc. That's the same thing that you have to do for Amari Cooper. You have to find ways to just get him the ball easier, you know, and not – he's going to be – if he's even in double coverage, we can't be forcing those balls to him, you know. And he even has said – when he does get the football, because there's no excuses for just wide open drops that are right at the numbers or right in his hands. There's no excuses for that. So what he needs to just do is stop thinking too much, stop trying to run before the ball's in his dang hands. But it helps with those just short, quick passes. So he doesn't even have time to think about what he's going to do after he catches the ball. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think over the course of this podcast here, we're talking a lot about what the Raiders are doing right or wrong. And I think that's more important than the matchup that they have coming up, because this is more about them. This is more about talented players not playing up to their potential and an offense that's clearly out of sync. So there's obviously a backup quarterback issue there. Another thing, maybe as we can kind of wrap this thing up, just hit on defense real quick. Throw in some positivity. What the heck?
Positivity.
Positivity is this front seven a little bit starting to come into form. They had four sacks against Denver, and Khalil Mack is going to do his thing, right? But the Mario Edwards, Bruce Irvin factor, I think, will change the way that they're schemed against. I think that's going to be good ultimately for Khalil here. This pass rush, especially against Joe Flacco, who has been struggling, who is a statue these days, I think that could really kind of turn the corner. How important is it for Irvin and Edwards to continue what they've done, especially last week?
Well, obviously that's a no-brainer. They have to continue that, right? I think that not to hate on the Broncos offensive line, but I just think that they're not very good. And you saw in the past, whenever the Raiders do play the Broncos, they get after the quarterback, whether it was, you know, Simeon or Peyton Manning, you know what I mean? They still find a way to get after the quarterback. So the good thing is that they just had a game like this, right? In Denver, they got after the quarterback, and now they have the confidence. So I always say how you just got to get that one good game, and then then everything else follows, you know, suit. You're going to roll off all these sacks, maybe strip sacks. Hopefully the Raiders can get an interception because that's what's lacking right now. But now you're playing a team who, I think they're last in the league in passing offense.
I think that's right.
Yeah. So guess what? This is going to be another chance for them to roll off back-to-back games where they can, you know, get that pass rush going, get after the quarterback, and hopefully, as I mentioned just a second ago, get some interceptions, because you already know when you get confidence going on a football team, whether it be offensively or defensively, they start to believe, okay, we're good, you know, and that can just really spark the rest of the season I guess put together a string of success defensively. And so again, that's, we talked about how Bruce Irvin had to help out Khalil Mack. And guess what? You had Mario Edwards Jr. Set the tone early on the interior, and then Khalil Mack do his thing, Bruce Irvin do his thing, and then it just kind of all came together for this defense. And they're looking pretty good. And it's so crazy to think, right, that we said, man, the defense just has to be a middle-of-the-road defense. But guess what? This defense, not only have they been pretty good these four games, but the last two games they have carried this offense. If the offense just scored a couple freaking touchdowns, they would have won the last two dang games.
Yeah, and that's why kind of getting the mojo back is going to be key in this game on all sides. We talked about a bunch of different guys that aren't really doing as well and need to do better. This is a real pivot point, obviously, because obviously EJ Manuel coming into his first start, that's another one of those things where the Raiders need to get right. They're at home. Yep. They're against a team that's been beaten pretty good twice in a row. This is a really important game for the Raiders to get back on track for their skill players and their backup quarterback.
Yep.
There's a lot that kind of need a mood and tone needs to shift here. They're going to have a really good chance to do that against Baltimore Sunday afternoon at Oakland Coliseum. Fallon, thank you so much for talking Raiders as we do every week. Guys, stay tuned. I was pretty pumped to talk to Cliff Branch, and he did not disappoint. Stick around. You hear a lot of good old stories, not only about the Raiders during that golden era, but also about Cliff Branch kind of coming up in Texas. He's a world-class sprinter who didn't chase a gold medal, instead chased an opportunity to play for Al Davis and the Silver and Black. Stay tuned for that. Guys, I'm so fired up from this week's guest on the Raiders Insider Podcast. It is former Raiders legend, wide receiver, Cliff Branch, somebody who played his entire 14-year career in the Silver and Black, who went across a longer glory days, a golden era from Madden to Flores, from Stabler to Plunkett, from Oakland to Los Angeles. That golden era, Cliff Branch was a part of all of it. And I guess, Cliff, my first question to you is, while it was more common for guys to play for one team back then than maybe it is right now, but did it mean something to you to play your entire 14-year career, 7 championship games, 3 Super Bowls, all with one team? Did that really mean something to you?
Scott, it meant the world to me, because I look at the game today and you have free agency going on, and so there's no loyalty when it comes to free agent, because players gonna go with the money is today, and you can't blame them. But to have the opportunities to play in the free agent era, I don't think I would have liked that, because I could never think of myself being with another team but the Raiders.
Yeah, and you really seem to kind of symbolize a lot of what the Raiders like to do, that speed, that reliability, that dynamic playmaking ability. Did you know when you got drafted by them in the fourth round? I know the NFL draft was a lot less dramatic and made for TV back then, but could you sense early on that you were in a spot where they were going to really value your particular skill set?
When I got drafted, you know, I was a big Washington Redskins fan, because I liked Bobby Mitchell and Charlie Taylor and Sonny Jurgens and Jerry Smith as a trio. And then Kansas City Chiefs, because of Otis Taylor and Mike Singletary, all came out of Houston Worthing High School. We all came out of the same high school.
Wow.
So I followed Otis Taylor. So I was a big chance Kansas City Chiefs fan. But when I got drafted by the Oakland Raiders and I started looking at the history of the Raiders, I said, oh my God, Al Davis, this maverick that everybody talks about, who's a genius of an owner. And then I'm gonna get to go play with Fred Belendecker and Raymond Chester and Warren Wells and play with the Mad Bomber Daryl LaMonica. I said, I'm going to a winning team, because usually when you get drafted in a high draft round, you go into a losing team.
Right.
And here I got drafted by the Oakland Raiders, who has this dynamic history of a great passing team that I'm going to, and I'll be able to learn from a Belendecker and a Raymond Chester and Daryl LaMonica. I was so excited, man. I say, this is a dream come true, because in order to be a successful pass receiver, you got to go to an organization that has skillful players, and to learn from Raymond Chester and Freddie Belendecker was a God sent in heaven.
It seems like everybody has a good Al Davis story, but when did you first meet him? I don't think that he called you on draft day, right? But like, when did you first meet him, and what was that relationship like, especially early on?
Well, Ken McLaurin was the guy that scouted me, mm-hmm. and he was the one that sold Al Davis on drafting me. So I didn't meet Ken McLaurin, but I knew he was the one that sold Al Davis on drafting me, because he covered the Big Eight country for scouting.
Mm-hmm.
So Tom Flores was sent out after I got drafted. The Raiders sent Tom Flores out to visit with me for a week to give me education on the way the Raiders like to do things for his pass receiver, for his running routes, running releases, and the types of routes that they like to run. So Flores came out and stayed me for a week and practiced me, because I was during that time I was preparing for the NCAA track and field championship. And so he was with me for a week. We would practice in the morning, and then I would go to school and then practice track and field in the afternoon. So he visited me for a week, and then that Saturday Al Davis flew in, and then we met up at Folsom Field, the University of Colorado football stadium. So he had me go out there and run some routes, you know what I mean, with Tom throwing me the ball. And then we were probably out there probably only 5 minutes.
Wow.
And I said, and I told Tom Fly, I said, he didn't really see anything. He said, well, I was with you for a week. Tom gave Al the results. And he said he just wanted to meet me and see me in person and stuff like that. And after we did that workout, we went up to the office and met the head coach of the University of Colorado, Eddie Crowder, and Steve Artmeyer was on that staff, and Larry Kennan, and Don Myers. Don James was all on the staff at the University of Colorado. So they brought up the highlight film. We watched our 1971 highlight film, because we finished number 3 in the nation that year. The first time in NCAA history, the number 1, number 2, and number 3 team from the Big Eight was a final 1, 2, 3 in the polls.
Wow.
So we watched the highlight film. And of course I had a dynamic senior year end up catching, having scored 11 touchdowns my senior year on kicks, reverses, and pass receiving. So, and then that's how I met Al Davis. I mean, he just wanted to come out and see me, and then we went up to the campus and met the head coach and watched the Hall of Fame. But that was my first introduction to Al Davis.
Wow. And then you kind of molded in with that, you know, Raiders team really kind of seamlessly. There are a lot of all pro and Pro Bowl teams early on. I always have a question that I like to ask Raiders alumni from this era. How the Raiders mystique about the Renegades and some of the hard partying at times and always playing rough. How much of that mystique was real? How much of it was just legend?
Well, it was very real because, you know, when we went to training camp, you played six preseason games in those days. So we were going to be in, and we would only break next to the last preseason game. So we would be in camp, training camp, for 6 weeks.
Wow.
Two days every day, pad zone every day. Morning practice, afternoon practice. An hour and a half practice with pad going on and hitting every day. So our training camps were really tough. And when you got off between practice, you had lunch and you get rested for an hour and two, then you back at it. But it was real tough competition in training camp because there was hitting going on every day, you know, tackling going on, not like today's era where you can only have so many practices and so many practices in pads, and then you have walkthroughs in the morning like that. And then guys would always say, man, can you imagine us having that kind of stuff going on in our era? I don't think the guys would have liked, but that's the way it is now because you're playing million-dollar players, and these guys got to be healthy and be ready to go when the season starts. So it's a different era, but that's all right.
But, yeah, I mean, it just seemed like – so for as much as, you know, you guys were like the bad boys of the NFL, there was also a lot of hard work that went into it, right? I mean,
yeah, it was a lot of hard work. And again, John Madden knew he had great athletes and guys that like to have fun off the field. And he was kind of guy that, you know, guys, this is going to be my rules. Pay attention when you come to work. Be on time and go like hell on Sundays. Otherwise, I'm gonna give you a lot of rope. You know, we would say they come and check curfew at 11 o'clock, and then the next day, John say, "God damn it, now." You know what I mean? You know, we check curfew at 11 o'clock. You know, it's 11:30, and we hear all the cars leaving. He said, "Guys, can't you at least wait till 12 o'clock before y'all leave?" That's kind of ship John Madden ran. He kept a loose atmosphere, and he gave the guys a lot of rope because he know he had great players. And they were going to pay attention. They're going to be on time, and they was going to go like hell on Sunday. So he could afford to give the guys a lot of rope because he had great athletes who were going to play hard on Sundays and give you 100%.
Again, you were in that Madden era, and then, of course, you know, the Super Bowl under Flores and that great story with Jim Plunkett. And then in Los Angeles, you win one for that market. Is there any Super Bowl ring that you value more?
Well, the 16-1, the 16-1 season, you know what I mean? Being that we lost to Miami Dolphins when they went the perfect season in 73, and then 2 years in a row when we thought we were the better team against Pittsburgh, and we end up losing because during the regular season we would always beat Pittsburgh. Then they would come back and beat us in a championship game. So we knew we were close. And then you're talking about three straight years of losing to Miami and right. Then moving to Dolphins. And in 76 season, we finally got over the hump of beating Pittsburgh in the opening game and then beating them in our home game for the championship game. And then went on to go 16-1, you know, and then at one point we were 3-0, and then we went into New England, and New England beat us up pretty good, 42-10, and then 13 straight weeks we didn't lose a football game.
Wow!
All the way to the world championship.
That's just an incredible run. And back then, you know, I feel like I couldn't talk to you without at least asking for one good Kenny Stabler story, especially since we're talking about
Kenny,
that era.
Just a magnificent player. You talking about the two most popular players in the Raider history would have to be maybe three players in the Raider history. The 14 years I was there with the Raiders, you start with George Blander, and then there's Kenny Stabler and Marcus Allen. To me, those guys were the most popular guys in the history of the Raiders because of the fact that what they brought to the winning organization of the Raiders. You know, Blander with all the miracle things that he did and playing 26 years, and then Kenny taking over, learning from George Blander how to be a productive quarterback, how to be able to call your own plays and stuff like that. And I had my finest year with Kenny Stabler because the four straight years I made All Pro and Pro Bowl was on the Kenny Stabler. And then you get a Heisman Trophy winner, Jim Plunkett, to come in, who took a beating in New England and then was released by the 49ers. And then Al Davis again was able to pull off another miracle thing to bring Jim over, let him get some rest, let him heal, let him get his confidence back. And then when they sent Kenny to Houston, you know, for Pastorini, Pastorini got hurt after the fifth game. And Jim Plunkett takes us on a Cinderella story and take us to the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl, comeback player of the year, MVP of the Super Bowl. Just a phenomenal story by Jim Plunkett and Kenny Stabler.
You know, and I know that you won't, you know, beat your own drum, so I will here. But I think that you're in that same class here. And, I mean, everybody who's listening to this, you know, to this podcast probably already knows that when you retired, you were in the top 14 in every major receiving category. You have better stats than a lot of guys that are already in the Hall of Fame already. And I think the case is pretty open and shut. Obviously, I think I've seen you quoted that, you know, for a while that it was tough sledding getting some guys in from that era. But then, you know, you see Ray Guy go in, you see Kenny Stabler go in. Is it still, how do you feel about the Hall of Fame at this stage? Are you still frustrated by it? Because it seems like you belong in there, you know. So Scott, how do you kind of take it?
Scott, I was quoted by John just to be patient. He says it's going to happen. Just be patient, and just stay alive. Just stay alive, you know, to when it does come, when they call your name for the Hall of Fame, that you are there to reap all the benefits by being alive. And I say, I am not dying until I get in the Hall of Fame. So once I get in the Hall of Fame, get that gold jacket and get that ring, I could die the next day. But I am going to stay alive for that. Deserving honor to come my way. So it's going to happen. I was real close this year in the senior committee because when Art Shell went in to represent me and spoke up for me, and it came down to the guy from the Packers,
mm-hmm.
And the linebacker from the Robert Brazil and myself, and it was a three-way tie, and the senior committee chose those guys over me. So I'm real close. I'm looking at maybe 2019 could be my year.
All right. Well, see, so that's a good kind of optimistic outlook, because I was going to say, are you frustrated about it? But it seems like you're maybe rejuvenated by the fact that, you know, it is close. I also read a bunch of materials that the Raiders organization has put out on social media, the hashtag, you know, Cliff to Canton. All of the materials are so detailed. I was already convinced, but then I go back and I read how you compared to people to other wideouts of your era, and how the math, you know, like, should be viewed, and like how the stats should be viewed. And I mean, it really seems open and shut. Do you appreciate how far this organization is still pushing for you?
Oh, I mean, Scott, I mean, Mark Badain, the president of the Raider organization, and Mark Davis really pushed really hard this year with the Cliff to Canton thing. They did everything. They got a lot of Hall of Fame people speak on my behalf, with Ronnie Lott and Mel Blount and Mike Dicker and just a lot of the Hall of Famers. And they said, well, deserve it. So the Raiders really pushed magnificently hard for me this year. And I know they were really disappointed and everything, but the push is there, mm-hmm. and it's going to happen. And I'm just so grateful. The Raiders, the way they pushed and drove for me to be in Canton was just unbelievable and magnificent. I'm very proud to be a Raider, and the push that they made this year was just unbelievable.
And it's not like you just became a world-class athlete once you put on silver and black, even back at the University of Colorado. Just as you were saying, you were a world-class sprinter. There was a chance where you could have gone to the Olympics or, you know, been in that type of class. I know that you'd gotten drafted. Was there any part of you that thought maybe I'll chase a gold medal? Was there any part of you that thought maybe I'll go in that direction?
Well, Scott, I thought about it, but when I got drafted by the Oakland Raiders, man, and my dream always to be a Bob Hayes type receiver,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? And he was one of my heroes and idols and stuff like that. And I looked at the Raider organization who had the great Warren Wells and what he did for, and then, you know, Hall of Famer Freddie Belendica and Raymond Chester. I say, no way in the world I'm thinking about chasing a gold medal. I'm going to an organization that knocks on the door every year for the division championship with Kansas City Chiefs, because that was the biggest rival in those days. And had been to the Super Bowl and been knocking on the door for many, many years. So it's like, no way gold medal. I want to be a pro, and I want to try to work to be an all pro receiver. And there's no better situation to be in there to learn from a Freddie Belendico and a Raymond Chester.
And if we can kind of keep going back in time here, you ended up at the University of Colorado. Even though you're a Texas kid, a Texas high school football player, but at the time, if I have it right, the Southwestern Conference, which featured so many schools that were close to your home, were still segregated. The Southeastern Conference was still segregated at the time. What was that experience like? That you were good enough to play at those schools, and yet you still had to go to a different conference farther from home?
Yes. Well, it really started in high school because we were segregated in the South, period.
Right.
In high school.
Right.
Because
that's a great
point.
The white
schools, the black schools could not play the white schools, and the white schools were not playing the black schools. So it was something that I grew up in that environment from day one. So it wasn't not a big factor. But when it came time to leave high school and go to college, you know, I couldn't attend the University of Texas, you know, or Texas A&M, because that whole conference. And if I had a chance to go to Southwest Conference, I would want to go to Arkansas because, again, you know, Lance Allworth went there and they were known for passing school. So if I had a chance to go to a Southwest Conference school, it would have been Arkansas because of the passing game, you know what I mean? Because Lance Allworth was a great pass receiver and they threw the ball. You talking about the rest of the schools like A&M and Longhorn
were
basically a running team, but I looked at the Southwest Conference. It would have been had to be Arkansas because they threw the football.
Then, if we're kind of staying on the same line here, does it mean something to you that not only did you play for an organization that valued your talents, but also throughout the course of NFL history, they've been trailblazers in terms of hiring African American head coaches and hiring females and doing a lot of different things and kind of pushing that movement forward in terms of football? Does that mean anything to you just to have worked under Al Davis and Mark Davis, who have been so adamant when it comes to those types of things?
Yeah, I mean, Al Davis did not see colors.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted production. You know what I mean? He didn't, if he were black, white, green, Spanish and everything. It was all about bringing a team together, doing it the right of day, having unity, you know, having beliefs, believing in one another and coming together as a team and be committed as one unit to win it on Sundays. And that's what the Raiders was all about. And I was blessed to be in that kind of situation.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about this current Raiders team. Just a couple quick things. Number one, Amari Cooper right now, such an amazing talent. I'm sure you feel the same way, but he's going through a bit of a slump right now. I'm sure all pro athletes do it. You know, like, what have you seen from him? If athletes are in a slump, is it just a matter of, you know, doing a couple positive things to get it going? What are you seeing from number 89?
Well, I when when Amari Cooper got was on the board and the Raiders could have the opportunity to draft him, and I got on my knees to Mark Davis. I said, Mark Davis, you got to draft Amari Cooper. I got on my knees and begged Mark Davis. He said, you're going to get your wishes. That's what you want. And I believe in the young kid, man. Mm-hmm. He's going through a tough time, but he'll come out of it. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of confidence in him. You know, receivers go through some frustrating things like that. But I would love to see the Raiders do some of the things that he did at Alabama.
Right.
You gotta get him away from just running slants. You know, he's a deep threat guy. You gotta put him on two or three deep balls a game. You know, whether you come up with it or not, you have to put that pressure on the secondary by throwing the ball deep. And that's what we did. We was going to throw the ball deep to me three or four times a game.
Right.
You can't just throw. The Raiders coordinator need to get away from running all these slants. Amari Cooper ran ins, outs, hooks, posts, corners. That's what he did at Alabama. You know, too much slants is not good. Everybody is sitting on the slants. You got to get away from it. He's a great route runner, and we got to get him using all the trees, passing tree routes of the passing game. You got to get away from the slant. Too many slants.
Oh, man, that is really good stuff. Cliff Branch, there was no route that, you know, you couldn't run and catch a ball, and everybody knows about the deep stuff. I think that undersells how well-rounded of a player that you were. You know, even before the hashtag came, if I had a vote, you would definitely have it. Cliff DeCanton, sir, thank you so much for taking the time. Best of luck, and I do agree with you. It's only a matter of time before you're wearing that gold jacket.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Great. Thank you, Cliff.
The Raiders Insider Podcast.